98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. Brought to you by Collins Comfort Masters, proud home services partner of the Arizona Cardinals. 4 o'clock reset.
We're going to get to the breaking story and the top story about Robert Sarver and the Suns in just a moment, because that is our top story of the day. But we lead off today's 4 o'clock reset with the Suns basketball team themselves, because it's hard to believe, given everything that's going on off the court. The Suns do have a basketball game coming up. 3 hours from right now, they're in Los Angeles. A rematch of last year's first-round playoff series against the Lakers. For both teams, Gamble, game number two of the season. Both teams lost game number one.
Lakers looking for Russell Westbrook to bounce back after that rough game that he had in the opener against Golden State. Did not play well. Looked very uncomfortable. He had 5 rebounds, 4 assists, but he was a minus 23. Just never really got going. LeBron had a big game. Anthony Davis had a big game. Those two played well, but they really did not play well defensively, and their bench did not play well in that game for them.
Be another team looking for a little revenge against the Phoenix Suns, given what the Suns did to the Lakers in the postseason last year. That game starts at 7 o'clock. You'll hear it here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. To the Cardinals we go. Chandler Jones back at the Cardinals facility today after missing time due to COVID, but head coach Cliff Kingsbury is still away from the team due to COVID protocols. Here's Vance Joseph on Chandler Jones.
We'll see how much he can play, or if he can play. He's here, he's smiling, he's in good spirits, you know, so we'll see how it works out. But with players, obviously, with the COVID, you know, for a 10-day COVID stint, it's always tough on players to come back and to be at full strength, so we have to gauge it and make sure it's right for him to play.
Yeah, I think we just sort of assumed he'd be available. Not necessarily the case. We'll see.
No, we'll see. I think it's what I've been told, like 50-50. Now, I do think, and I'm reporting this a little bit earlier, that I expect that they're going to flex a couple of players because of the Chandler Jones situation, the Fitz situation. So I expect them to flex defensive lineman Josh Morrow and linebacker Joe Walker. I think both of those guys could be flexed to play in this game on Sunday.
Cliff Kingsbury, by the way, has still been coaching the team remotely via Zoom. And so according to Vance Joseph, again, acting kind of head coaches of the Cardinals, if Kingsbury gets cleared on Saturday or even Sunday, he will coach the team.
Absolutely. The plan that we have on that side of the ball, it's Cliff's plan. You know, and with the virtual stuff, it's like he's in a room with us. You know, so nothing's changed from the prep standpoint. You know, so if he comes up Saturday or Sunday, he can definitely coach the game.
He's like Roy Kent, man. He's here. He's there. He's every freaking where.
Yeah.
Cliff Kingsbury.
We'll see if he's available. He has to produce
I missed that show already.
I missed those characters.
To come back.
I know. We'll see if he produces the two negative tests within 24 hours. That's what it's going to take for him to get back. We mentioned the college football coming up this weekend. ASU off. U of A taking on Washington tonight. Also, baseball tonight. The Houston Astros have the potential to punch their ticket to the World Series. Game 6 between the Astros and the Red Sox is about an hour away. Last night, the Dodgers staved off elimination. They're awfully good at those elimination games. Look out.
It was 2-0 Braves.
I know.
Man, that was it.
11-2 L.A. last night.
Dodgers, Red Sox, Dodgers-Astros is just... Ugh.
Nightmare.
I just don't have any interest.
The Braves still have a 3-2 lead. They just need to win one more game to advance the World Series. But then they were in the same situation a year ago, and they lost three straight.
You can't choke again, can you? Like that 2 years in a row?
Sure, you could. Oh. Hope you don't. That's coming up later tonight. But top story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo show, and we've been talking about it all day long, the author of this tweet, who's, interestingly enough, and we were just talking about this off the air a second ago, is not, from what we understand, the author of the story.
No. I reported earlier, from what I was able to gather, that the person that's asking a lot of the questions for the story is an ESPN reporter. And I gave his name out earlier, and I'll just try to find Baxter Holmes.
Baxter Holmes.
And I tweeted this out a while ago, that the one person close to the team tells me Baxter Holmes of ESPN was involved with the story. Now, I don't know if he's the main, you know, story writer or not, but I had you do some research on him. You said he's more of like an investigative reporter out of L.A., but the name I heard that had been, you know, going around talking to people and things like that was Baxter Holmes of ESPN.
So here's what happened today. Jordan Schultz, who hosts a podcast centered around the NBA, used to work for Yahoo Sports. He's going to join us at 5:30 today. He sent out a tweet about 2 hours ago. Breaking: the NBA is preparing for a massive story accusing Suns owner Robert Sarver of racism, sexism, and sexual harassment in a series of incidents, sources say. With enough evidence to support such claims, there's a real chance the league would forcibly remove Sarver from his position. Now, again, Jordan, to your point, it doesn't sound like Jordan is the one who is the author of the story. Jordan is just the one telling us it's coming. Jordan is just the one telling us, hey, the NBA is getting ready for a big bombshell to drop sometime next week about the Phoenix Suns. Just letting you know it's coming.
I sent a message to this Baxter Holmes. I sent the message to him just, you know, reaching out and seeing if when the story will be, when it could be released and things like that. So I expect, based on, you know, the conversations I've had with people, that this is the guy doing the story, or somebody with ESPN is doing the story. So we'll find out. But apparently, from what people are saying, it could come as early as next week.
Statement from Robert Sarver. It was released about an hour ago. I am wholly shocked by some of the allegations purported by ESPN. I can't begin to know how to respond to some of the vague suggestions made by mostly anonymous voices. These are claims I find completely repugnant to my nature. I can tell you they never, ever happened. I don't begin to know how to prove something that didn't happen, and it is difficult to erase or forget ugly accusations once they are made. Even hints of racism or sexism in our culture today are toxic and damaging and should not be lightly raised. I categorically deny any and all suggestions I use disparaging language related to race or gender. Jason Rowley, the president and CEO of the Suns, in my opinion, took it a step further. Quote, "This story is completely outrageous and false. It doesn't represent at all the Robert Sarver I've worked alongside of for 15 years. He's not a racist. He's not a sexist. I will also say that reporter in this instance has shown a reckless disregard for the truth. He has harassed employees, former employees, and family members, used truths, half-truths, and rumors to manufacture a story. His tactics throughout this process have been without any basis in journalism ethics or even morality," close quote. That's strong. That's real strong.
I spoke with an employee, a former employee, and he says, listen, I know about 10 people have been interviewed in the last year about a story that was supposed to run when the regular season ended, but the Suns kept winning. They kept pushing it back. 50-plus people interviewed. I said, okay. I said, you know, what else can you tell me? Nothing other than that, for me personally, any of the racism or sexism stuff would definitely be surprising from working there. So that's what this person said that I'm speaking with. That was an employee there. Now, I did speak with two of the, and I don't know, it was executives or high-end people in the organization that are no longer there, just to get their feeling, just to get their feeling on this. One of them told me, look, wouldn't surprise me no matter what to happen there. Okay, that was one. Another one, who was here for many years, said, look, this story is total BS. When I was there, if any of this stuff would have been happening when I was there, I would have known about it. There was a lot of high-character people. Rick Welts worked here for a long time. That kind of environment never existed, and if it did, I would have known about it. So that was another person that I spoke with. So I did speak with an employee that said, look, I was there. I'd never seen it. And you can only speak to as many people. Now, maybe, listen, you never know what in a small group of people or a one-on-one or anything like that. I'm not saying I know anything, right? We don't know anything. We just know that there's some report that's coming out. But I have spoken with employees. I've spoken with, you know, high-end organizational people, like near the top, a couple of different ones who I'm speaking with, just trying to get a gauge, you know, what is going on. And I always say, from my personal experience, I don't work there. I've never worked there. I don't know the guy as well as people think I do, but my interactions with him, I would be surprised. I've never seen any of that type of behavior ever.
Until we have the story in front of our faces, until we have it in our hands, so to speak, it's hard to comment without, you know, beyond the vague sort of generalizations that we're going to come to expect in this story whenever it's released next week. I'll say this, though. The three things that come to mind. Number one, Robert's absolutely right in the statement when he says, even hints of racism or sexism in our culture today are toxic and damaging and should not be lightly raised. It is very difficult to put the toothpaste back in the tube when it's out like that. It's very hard not to have an impression formed. Number two, the suggestion from Jordan Schultz that the NBA could have a Donald Sterling 2.0 situation on their hands, and the suggestion that if they're able to corroborate, I would imagine through their own investigation, some of the allegations, that maybe they'd be willing to do that to Robert. And then number three, and I say this understanding where a lot of Suns fans are when it comes to Robert Sarver, how some Suns fans might celebrate if something like that were to happen from the league's perspective, like a Donald Sterling.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now, for a team trying to repeat going to the NBA Finals in advance, I don't think this is a good distraction for them to have in the middle of that season. As much as you might think you want Robert to be gone as the owner of the Phoenix Suns, all right? And I get that. I really get that. Man, of all the times for this to come out, you're trying to repeat as Western Conference champions and maybe get your first ever NBA championship. This comes out now? I know some Suns fans will celebrate this. This is a hard thing for me to celebrate given what's on the line for this basketball team right now. It's a really bad time for this to
come out.
I
need to see the story, but I certainly don't trust everything that ESPN writes. I mean, they did a chop job on Sarver years ago, and the reporter actually called me up, and I said, well, did you speak to Alvin Gentry? Did you speak to Steve Kerr? Did you speak to Grant Hill? I mean, you're saying that Sarver dressed down Grant Hill, but did you talk to Grant? He was like, no, I didn't. Well, I'm like, I just talked to Grant. I got a text message from Grant right here. It says, Gambo, that didn't happen at all. He never dressed me down. He was always good to me. What you've heard about him is true. Vince was killing us. I was guarding Dirk. He suggested that I guard Vince in the second half, and I did, and I shut him down too, LOL. So, like, there was terrible reporting. There's been terrible reporting done on Sarver before. That is true. And I've checked on this, and I check on this stuff. And I went to Grant Hill, and Grant, they're saying that this happened. Did this happen? No, Gambo, man, that never happened. So it was false. And that reporter called me up, and I said, but did you talk to this guy? This guy, no, I didn't talk to any of those guys. Well, why are you even doing the story?
Yeah.
So now I don't know who this reporter spoke to, but we'll see. Like, we'll find out. And then we'll be able to gauge it from that.
Attention, Cardinals fans, were issuing a code red all week. The Cheeseheads from the north invade State Farm Stadium
those
for
bastards.
Thursday night football.
Don't let them.
Text red to 620-620. Listen for your name during Bickley and Murata, 7 a.m., 8 a.m., 9 a.m. hour every day to win two tickets to see the Cardinals take on the Packers next week. And we are issuing a code red. Again, text red to 620-620. Many thought he came to Arizona because he was chasing the money. As it turns out, J.J. Watt made the right decision in free agency when he picked the Cardinals. We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. As J.J. Watt prepares to play his former team for the first time this season and in his career, as the Cardinals get ready to take on the Texans, J.J. Watt said it yesterday. Man, at this point, a title is the only thing I care about.
It's the only thing driving me now. I mean, I'm fortunate. I've made a lot of money in this league, fortunately. I've won individual awards in this league. I've accomplished things in this league. There is one thing that I haven't accomplished that I want to accomplish, and it's the only thing that matters.
There was an interesting story today on Deadspin, and we were talking about a pre-show. When the news came out that J.J. Watt was coming to the Cardinals, two-year, $31 million deal, $23 million guaranteed.
Okay.
There were a couple of tweets out there that, given what his other options might have been, remember at the time it was he was going to go to Pittsburgh and play with his brother.
Right.
He was going to go home to Wisconsin and play with Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay, right? And he could go to these teams where his chances of winning a Super Bowl ring were perceived to be much better.
Not a Super Bowl.
A Super Bowl ring.
Super Bowl ring.
He comes to Arizona, and immediately, some people, not everybody, but some people were like, oh, he took the cash. He took the money. He went to the highest bidder, you know? And he could have made things easier on himself by chasing a ring if he had gone to Pittsburgh or if he'd gone to Green Bay or if he'd gone to Tampa Bay or wherever it might have been. But instead, he took the $23 million guaranteed and went to Arizona. That was the mood by some in the moment. Isn't it funny now, what is it, 7 months later, right, since that happened?
It was
March
1st.
Yeah,
March
this,
1st.
This is October.
Late April or March 1st.
Yeah. 7 months later, how nobody talks about that narrative anymore. Nobody talks about chasing the dollars with J.J. Watt
I can
anymore.
Go back to a tweet that I put out on March 1st. The deal J.J. Watt signed with the Cardinals was not the most he was offered. The Cleveland Browns and Indianapolis Colts each offered more money. Tennessee's offer was very similar. So you could talk about Green Bay and you could talk about Pittsburgh. The reality is that the Cleveland Browns and Indianapolis Colts both offered more money than what he signed with the Cardinals, and the Tennessee Titans had an offer that was very similar. He chose to come play in Arizona. You know, Cleveland could be cold, and he decided to come play here. But those were the offers. That was what I put out on March 1st. Cleveland, Indy had more offers. Tennessee was similar. He chose Arizona. Look, obviously, you know, Chris Paul and the Suns, J.J. Watt and the Cardinals, there was something he looked at with this organization he liked. Something he looked at and he said, you know what, I see something here. I want to win. Now he's right. He's made a lot of money. He's had all the individual accolades. You know, when you're younger and you haven't made the money, to say that winning is your top priority is probably wrong. And, you know, listen, I'm good with that. Everybody wants to win. But when you're young, one of the most important things to do is I want to get money. I want to get paid. I want to have financial security. I want to have a nice house. I want to be able to do the things. And you worked so hard for that. And that's the reward. The reward is the money.
Sure.
Now, when you're older and you've made the money, then you know what? You could even don't mind sacrificing a little bit of money to win. You want to win. You want that championship. You want that ring. You want that glory that comes with winning a championship. You hear an A.J. Green and J.J. Watt talk about that more on a regular basis now. Those guys have made a lot of money. They can look at winning as the top priority. When you're younger and you haven't won and you haven't had the money, I still think the money will trump the championship when you're younger.
Probably. I'm just thinking back to that time when he chose the Arizona Cardinals. Mm-hmm. If winning and nothing but winning was the only goal, weren't there more obvious destinations for him to consider
Buffalo
ahead of the Arizona Cardinals?
Buffalo was the main competition. I was told, and I put this out on March 1st too, I was told the Cardinals beat out 9 teams for J.J. Watt. Buffalo was the biggest competition.
Okay.
The Bills. So, now, if he would have went to the Bills, he would be in a very similar situation to the Cardinals. He'd be on a team, a winning team, that would have a good chance of winning a championship.
But he would have been on a team that would have gone to the AFC Championship a year ago, a team that was further along the curve than the Arizona Cardinals
were.
Yeah,
but could he have pushed them over the hump, you know?
That's what I mean. That's exactly what I mean, is that had he chosen the Bills, nobody would have blamed him for choosing the Bills because that was a 13-3 team from a year ago.
Right.
So I guess what I'm trying to say is that in choosing the Cardinals, it wasn't the most obvious choice in terms of choosing a winner. But A, obviously he saw something here he liked. And B, obviously the Cardinals were enough of a contender and offering him enough money that's why he chose them, right? Because it's never just one or the other. Some of it's I want to win. Some of it's I want to get paid. And he probably, like the Buffalo situation, could he have gone to Buffalo? Yes. Would he have made $23 million in guaranteed? Maybe not.
No, Buffalo was not offering the money the Cardinals were. Buffalo had a lower offer than what the Cardinals had.
So you start weighing, I want to win, and I want to make some bank too. Where can I do both? Because
and the Cardinals,
of all the teams he could have chosen, I'm telling you, the Cardinals were not the, oh, yeah, that's the team that's going to be 6-0 after six weeks next season. They weren't that obvious, right?
You know, I watched this show. I watched this show, and I love this show, this International House Hunters show, right? And they show these people they're in Amsterdam, and they show these people three houses, and they got check marks. Oh, that one has the canal view, and it has the big backyard, but it doesn't have this. This one has the city view. And for J.J. Watt, when you're checking boxes, it's like the Cardinals, okay, money, check. Winning, check. Like Buffalo, it may have been winning, check, money, no. For Cleveland, he may have looked at Cleveland or Indianapolis and said, okay, money, check, winning, probably not. So he probably weighed the Cardinals against these other offers and felt like the combination of money and chance to win was more equal than anybody else's offer.
And I'm not saying you couldn't have predicted the Cardinals were going to be good. You could have predicted the Cardinals were going to be good based off of their kind of growth that they had over the last 3 years. But this good, you know, like to know they would have been this good.
No, he'd be lying if he said that.
It's hard to think that he wouldn't have had other better choices as a free agent for teams that were perceived to be closer to a Super Bowl than the Cardinals.
Buffalo would have been good. Cleveland and Indianapolis, I mean, that would have been okay. Tennessee, those are all good teams.
Yes, those are all
good.
Tennessee and Cleveland in particular would have been ones where you could have looked at and said, man, those two teams are really close. And if money, I go there, I put them over the top.
And the money was there with those teams. The money was there.
The Suns didn't quite look like themselves in the season opener against the Nuggets Wednesday night. And there were three areas of note that just looked different. We'll tell you what they are next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Let's get an update on our Twitter poll question of the day on this, his final day after 8 years as the producer of the Burns and Gambo show.
Say it ain't so.
It is true. Jordan Bird entering his final 2 hours as the producer of the show. He's got an update on our Twitter poll question of the day.
Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
We'll carve out some time a little bit later on the show to kind of celebrate Jordan and talk with Jordan. Man. I feel like the Sun story, the Sarver story is just absolutely...
It's the biggest story of the day here is that Jordan Bird is leaving.
It is.
It's
but
the biggest day. I mean, we will no longer have Jordan Bird doing the show with us.
The biggest story out there is this thing with the Suns and Robert Sarver. So it's kind of hijacked
biggest
our
story
plans.
To five people or biggest story to 500,000?
Exactly. What matters to the five of us in this room and what matters to the 500,000 people who are out there? That being said, you got our poll question today, Jordan. What do you have?
Yeah, so for this Cardinals game Sunday against the Texans, they are heavy, heavy favorites. So do you think Arizona will win by more than 17.5 points? Yes or no?
I'll just tell you right now, as the one guy among the two of us who tends to dabble a little bit in this sports gambling thing,
okay.
I wouldn't put a cent on this game.
Who said anything about sports gambling?
Oh,
we just want to know if they're going to win by more than a certain amount of points.
I'm just saying when a number is that big, I get very nervous. That's just a really, really big number. That said, I think the Cardinals will win by 17.5 points.
I would say because I don't think the Texans are really trying to win football games.
I think the Texans are just...
I don't think they're trying to win football
hideous.
Games.
Yeah. I know they're getting, Danny Amendola back, I read today, and I think the
Cardinals
still
got Davis Mills throwing the ball.
Yes, you do. I think the Cardinals cover.
It's a little bit closer than I anticipated, but maybe it's because of that 17.5 points, but only 54% say yes, the Cardinals will win by more than that. 46% say no.
All right. You can find that poll question, and you can wish Jordan well on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page, at Burns and Gambo, one word. As like I say, today is his last day after 8 great years of producing the Burns and Gambo show, and he will be missed, man. His fingerprints are all over every single show, man. We're going to have a hard time replacing him. There's no doubt about that. So we'll properly say goodbye to him a little later on in the show. Let's talk about the Suns basketball team for a minute. I know the Jordan Schultz tweet. We're going to have him on in less than an hour. The Suns' response in which they just unleashed holy hell on ESPN for something they haven't even reported yet, right? And they just went after him. Let's talk about the game itself, because the Suns are in Los Angeles taking on the Lakers tonight.
It's a must-win game. No, I'm teasing.
No, it's not. It's another nationally televised game. But our friends over at Bright Side of the Sun pointed out, and I hadn't really thought about it quite like this, but there were some new things that the Suns tried against the Nuggets on Wednesday night.
Okay,
one of them, they posted up DeAndre Ayton a lot more. Like, pure traditional post up the big man. And even after the game, Monty said, yeah, we got points off of it. Wasn't really our style. It's not really how we do things.
No, you don't want him. A lot of his points last year came in just rolls to the basket,
yes.
Lobs, alley-oops, put back offensive rebound, the dunks. They weren't, let's post him up, and try to see if we could take advantage of his size to get that little turnaround. He had worked on that hook shot quite a bit. He still settled for some fadeaway jump shots and things like that where he's trying to shoot over a guy. But, yeah, the post-up game is not something his points aren't usually going to come that way where you say, okay, we're going to post up DeAndre and take him in. Now, if you got a smaller guy on him, okay, then that makes a lot of sense. But that's not traditionally how they want to play.
5 post-ups in 5 minutes for DeAndre to start that game, which, again, for anybody who's watched this team any more than 4 or 5 games, we'll tell you that's not how they typically work DeAndre Ayton. Usually it's like you say, rim runs, attacking the basket,
yeah,
lobs,
run the court,
pick and rolls,
we'll run
things
the court,
like that.
Get the alley-oop, get the offensive rebound, put it back, hit some free throws when you get fouled. That's how he gets his points.
Something else happened with Ayton that night, and this wasn't even one of the 3 things I was counting. DeAndre Ayton attempted a career high, tied a career high, 3 3-point attempts. Is this the year where he finally tries to introduce that to his game? And
I hope
do
not.
We want him
I hope not.
To introduce that
no.
to his game this
no.
year?
I got other guys that are better at shooting the 3 for the most part. He wasn't that night, but that Devin Booker guy is pretty good at it. Landry Shamet, pretty good at it. Jay Crowder, 0-for-5 that night, but he's usually decent. There's other guys that shoot the 3. I don't need DeAndre Ayton shooting 3s. Look, if you pull a guy away from the basket to guard you, I mean, that could open things up for other guys. I understand that part of floor spacing, but no, I don't want DeAndre shooting 3s.
Honestly, my first thought when I saw him taking all those 3s, and I say all those 3s, it was just 3 of them, but for him, that's a lot. I thought, I wonder if that's him trying to become more of an offensive basketball player to look more like a max player. That was when he jacked
because
up when
Embiid
he jacked up the
Jokic
third one. Yeah, when
those
he,
guys shoot threes.
I mean, Jokic had the rainbow one at the end of the first half, right? I wonder if Ayton's thinking is that's how I get paid a max contract, and therefore I have to start shooting more threes, because it did seem like an uncharacteristically high number for him.
I think that's not in the context of how they want to play. So I think that, you know, guys would get on him pretty quick about that.
Number two, and they kind of go hand in hand with each other. And this, and by the way, full credit where credit's due. Bright Side of the Sun wrote about a lot of this stuff, and I read it on their website today. So I'm getting a lot of these ideas from them. I wanted to make sure I gave them proper credit on that one. Mikal Bridges, a lot more aggressive driving to the basket than he was a year ago, and Devin Booker spent a lot more time behind the 3-point line than he did a year ago. His shots were almost 50-50. Inside the 3-point line and
tired.
Outside the 3-point line.
Tired, not ready yet. Coming off of COVID, not having the same amount of rest as everybody else, and then, you know, having the COVID and not having a preseason like the rest. What do you play, one preseason game?
Yeah, I think like 17 preseason minutes.
That's just the legs aren't there yet, and that's what happens. You see LeBron doing that. You know, when guys get older, when they get tired, or if they're coming off of an injury or a sickness, you settle for a little bit more of the three-pointers. You don't drive to the basket and pull up with that mid-range jump shot quite a bit. So I think that was it. That's not Devin Booker's game. Devin Booker's game is still mid-range jump shot, driving to the basket, getting to the free throw line, knocking down some threes, but he's not going to be a guy that, you know, half his shots are going to be three-point attempts.
Yeah, Devin Booker was 1 of 8 inside the three-point line, 2 of 7 behind the three-point line. So he took almost as many shots from beyond the arc as he did inside the arc. The one thing I'll say about Book is if you look at his three-point shooting percentages from a year ago, it seems strange to say this. That is something he could get better at. It doesn't.
Oh, it's the first thing we said when a season
was
over.
It doesn't seem like something he should be getting better.
Defense, number one, get better defensively, add that arsenal to your game. Remember, we were kind of impressed with some of the way he's played against Milwaukee with his defense, right? And then the other thing is you could become a better three-point shooter.
He could.
Yeah. He's not an assassin from three.
No.
He's not Steph Curry.
He's not a catch-and-shoot assassin guy. It's one of the first things I noticed towards the end of the season last year is that, if I'm nitpicking, that's kind of something I want Devin Booker to work on a little bit is his three-point shot. Mikal driving to the hoop, I think that's clearly a function of I got paid $90 million. I'm going to try to show everybody that I was worth it. You know, by being more of a rim runner, attacker kind of
guy.
Didn't
you not think that was him more towards the end of the season and even in the playoffs?
I think he did it more on Wednesday than we saw in the playoffs.
I think that's a part of his game that I really saw coming, and he was excelling at it, especially along the baseline. Drive the baseline, go to the basket. He's got such great length and body control when he gets up in the air. So I kind of feel like that was becoming a part of his game and not just, shooting, spotting up. He's not a guy that you want to just spot up in the corner and shoot threes because he does have great length. He can drive. He can handle the ball. He can pass. So I would say out of the things that you just mentioned, that's the thing I think we'll see more with regularity than the other two.
Attention, Cardinal fans. We are issuing a Nathan Jessup-inspired code red all next week. Cheeseheads from the north are probably going to invade State Farm Stadium for Thursday Night Football when the Packers play the Cardinals. Text the word red to 620-620. Listen for your name during the Bickley and Murata show all next week to win 2 tickets to see the Cardinals take on the Packers. Again, text the word red to 620-620. Houston Texans, only one win so far in the season. They've been getting blown out as of late. But according to Vance Joseph, the Cardinals are not focused on Houston's shortcomings. You'll hear what he had to say next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Live from the Oxygen Community Studios, it is Burns and Gambo here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We will reset the Suns story at the top of the next hour, 5 o'clock. We will bring you the very latest in terms of the Suns' statement. We'll get into detail what we know about the story, what we know about what Jordan Schultz has tweeted. We're going to have Jordan on the show in the 5 o'clock hour and tell you everything that's going on with the state of the Suns right now, because it has been, needless to say, a very messy day for the Phoenix Suns with what we know and with what we don't know, and there's a lot to talk about. That's coming up at 5 o'clock. We've also got the Cardinals getting ready to take on a Texans team that is just awful. How awful would you say, Gambo?
How bad are the Texans?
Since beating, I believe it was the Jags in week one.
Okay.
They have lost, and Bob McManaman did these numbers. I could have easily done the same. They've lost each of their last five games. They have been outscored by 96 points.
Look at the two road games. I think they've only scored 3 points in those last two road games. They don't score in these road games. They got a terrible quarterback. They got a terrible team. It's just a bad football team. You know, now players will go out and they'll try to play hard. They don't want to lose every game they play, but, you know, management, ownership, they've set them up to fail. Like, that's a team that's been set up to fail. That's a team that's been set up not to have success. Now, you still got to go out there and play them, and I don't care if the Suns win by, I mean, if the Cardinals win by 3 or they win by 10 or they win by 20. I just get a win, get the 7-0. If you don't blow them out, you'll have those people, those talking heads like Keyshawn Johnson. Oh, I still don't know about this about the Cardinals. I don't care. Like, I don't care what any of those guys say. Win and get to 7-0. All right, that's all. The Suns. The Cardinals have played.
Get your brain off the Suns, Gambo.
They played some very impressive games. They blew out Cleveland. They blew out the Rams. You're not going to be perfect in every single game. They're very likely going to beat the hell out of this team. But as long as you win, that's all that matters. You're playing a bad football team.
Last two games on the road, they've been outscored 71-3.
71-3. Wow.
71-3.
Wow.
In total on the road, in three road games this year, they've been outscored 102-24.
Now you question, like, I mean, honestly, how many points can they score? What's the most amount of points you think that team could score on the road against the Cardinals defense?
With Davis Mills as their quarterback.
They're averaging in their last two games, they're averaging 1.5 points per game. But they're not, like, is it 10? Is it 13? Like, that team's not putting up 20 on the Cardinals, right?
I think
right?
13 would be the max.
I would say something like 13.
A touchdown
and two field goals.
Yeah, I'm probably being generous when I say that. But I think
could they score 3 touchdowns against the Cardinals?
They could. Could they get a late garbage time touchdown? I could see late garbage time one that pushes it to 21. Look, I don't care whether the Cardinals cover or not. I don't think it's a statement that the Cardinals have to blow out the Houston Texans.
Yes, you don't got no money on the game.
No, I won't. I don't touch games where the spread is like this. They make me very uncomfortable. But it doesn't, in terms of how we interpret the Cardinals, I don't think they have to go blow out the Houston Texans to prove themselves or show they belong or anything like that. Win, go to 7-0, be healthy, play the Packers on Thursday, and just that game is going to be nothing against this Texans game. Man, that game on Thursday night is going to be one of the most anticipated, most scrutinized game of the entire NFL season up until this point. They're going to get huge numbers for that game. On Fox, huge. The potentially 7-0 Cardinals versus the potentially, 6-1 Green Bay Packers on national. That's a premier marquee.
Well, think about
game.
How you sell that. I mean, could home field advantage in the NFC West playoffs be on the line in this game?
Old guard quarterback versus the young guard quarterback. Right. Oh, you could market the hell out of
could
that
the
game.
Could the Packers
be the
first team to take down the Cardinals?
Absolutely. Absolutely. On the Texans, Vance Joseph, once again speaking as the head coach of the Cardinals today, still no Cliff Kingsbury, said, "You might look at the Texans as a 1-5 team. We don't.
It's an NFL game. You know, we don't see it like that, guys. You know, we don't see it like a 1-5 team. It's an NFL team that's coming to town with really good NFL players. That's how we view it. You know, as I'm watching the tape, the score rarely comes to my mind. I'm watching concept. I'm watching players. I'm watching guys getting blocked, right? Watching the QB make throws. So I'm not watching the score, you know. So you're watching from a game plan perspective. Players are watching from a player's perspective. So we don't care about the record. I mean, it's going to be a hard to win on Sunday because it's an NFL team, you know. So no one sees it that way. It can't be a trap game. That's BS. You know, that's insulting to the league. But I think we're fully engaged right now and having fun winning. So That's good for our team.
Look, the only thing that I would point to is the Jaguar game. I mean, the Jags had lost 17 games in a row, and in the third quarter, they'd beaten the Cardinals 19-10.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're losing by 2 scores to the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're trash. Okay, they're not any good, and you guys were down. So you just got to, you know, you got to be prepared to play. I mean, I'm not saying Advance is lying here. I mean, he's probably watching for concepts and schemes you know, how do I defend this and how do I defend that and what's a good time to blitz and what do they do? What do they like? What's their tendencies on third and one? What's their tendencies on third and two? What's their tendencies on first down? Like, he's trying to gather all of that stuff up, not really see, you know, what. But what you're not going to get is you're not going to get a lot of, hey, how's this team doing in the red zone? Because they don't get there very much.
Yeah. I think I always think that that's an old head coaching kind of like Jedi mind trick, that when Vance Joseph or Cliff Kingsbury or whomever, it could be any coach anywhere, says something like, man, when I look at the Texans, I don't see a 1-5 team. That's a message that they're delivering to the media. That's a message that they're delivering to the fans. It's also a message he's delivering to his own locker room. And sometimes, hey, you hear coach say it, we're not talking about them like, oh, they're a 1-5 team. You know, you want that message to resonate as loudly and for as long as it possibly can among your players. And so you say it to their faces, but you also say it to the media. So they also read it. So they also see it. So they see that soundbite. So when they're listening to the Burns and Gambo show, they hear Vance Joseph say it because you want to reinforce that message every chance you get. It's an old head coaching trick.
Merciless had three sacks. They let him go, right? Merciless had three sacks, I think. They're 31st in the NFL in total pressures. They've only got 40. And they're 29th in sacks. They've got 10. And they just let go of a guy who had three of them.
Yeah.
Like, this should be a very clean pocket for Kyler Murray. They should be able to have success running the ball, passing the ball, and not having their quarterback get hit. This is not a defense that gets much pressure on the opposing quarterback.
We mentioned the Packers game. Vance Joseph was asked today if the coaches catch themselves looking ahead a little bit because it's a short week.
I don't think coaches think that far ahead. You know, I don't. You know, my sole focus is it's today's meetings, tomorrow's meetings, and playing our best ball on Sunday morning. You know, and once you get there, you know, obviously things change, but right now, man, we were concerned about playing our best game of the year at home, you know, against a scrappy Texans team, you know. So, no, I mean, I wouldn't do it as a coach. I can't speak for anyone else, but my focus is on the Texans right now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I mean, I probably.
Yeah,
but you've got people working ahead on the Packers. I'm going to focus on the Texans, but you've got people working ahead on the Packers.
That's what I think.
You got to get a head start. Now, your benefit against the Packers is that they got to come here.
Yes.
So they lose a day that you don't lose. They lose a travel day. You don't have that travel day. Yeah. That's the advantage that the Cardinals will have.
One last thing from Vance, and I'll just pass along what he said, that Cliff Kingsbury has been acting as if he's been the head coach all week long through the Zoom meetings and meeting and building the game plan and things like that, so that if sometime between now and 1:25 on Sunday he passes the protocols and is allowed to coach, he will coach because he's been building the game plan and he's been running the meetings. He's just been doing it remotely. So as soon as he's cleared, like Steve Keim, he told us earlier, is waiting to get cleared. As soon as he gets cleared, Cliff will be the coach, and if that happens on Saturday or Sunday, Cliff will be the head coach on the sideline for the Cardinals Sunday against the Texans.
And if he's not, you know what? They've got the guys in place with experience now doing it. They should be fine.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show here on the Burns and Gambo show. Boy, that was repetitive. The Phoenix has been a crazy day. Phoenix Suns are playing the Lakers tonight. But there's going to be a report coming up, maybe as early as next week, that potentially paints owner Robert Sarver in a very negative light. We'll catch you up on all the latest and what the Suns are already saying about allegations that haven't even been made yet next on the Burns and Gambo show.